Wake up! It's the Sleep Unplugged podcast with Dr. Chris Winner, episode 53, Sleep and Green Spaces, Lay Me Down in the Tall Grass. Welcome everyone to this very special episode of the Sleep Unplugged podcast. My name is Dr. Chris Winner. I'm a sleep specialist and neurologist. If you're new to the podcast, welcome to the family. If you're a veteran, welcome back. We have a lot to get through today. I just got back from the Aspen Ideas Conference, fully invigorated, and thought being in this amazing place, in this scenic beauty, was inspiring for today's topic about how the environment affects our sleep. And wow, there's been a lot of research about that in the last couple of years. I really feel like with COVID, there was just an explosion of looking at the links we have to beautiful spaces, natural spaces, our sleep, our mental health, et cetera. A lot of conversation about that at the Aspen Ideas Conference. Just want to thank everybody there that I met for the invitation to come speak. It was an honor to be among such brilliant, innovative thinkers and problem solvers, as was a real theme of the conference. We've got problems in lots of different areas of health, our environment, et cetera, and it's going to take great innovation to fix it. And wow, were there some great innovative thinkers there. Still having trouble settling my mind about all the things that we were talking about there. If you're tuning into the show on the YouTube channel, you can find us on YouTube. You can find my social media, Dr. Chris Winter, Twitter, Dr. Chris Winter, Instagram. You can see my shirt. It says Sleep Vigilante. That was a gift from my good buddy, Dr. Abhinav Singh, whose new book has finally come out. It is called Sleep to Heal. You can order it on Amazon, and really excited for him to have that book out there. I love the title. I haven't received my copy yet, but can't wait to start reading it. Definitely in the running for the Sleep Unplugged Podcast Year-End Award Book of the Year. It's going to be a real showdown between Dr. Singh and Dr. Wu at this point. There may be other entries. The year is but half over. So excited for him and congratulations. You can follow him at Sleep Vigilante on Twitter, full of great information about sleep. So today marks actually June 27th. You'll be hearing this on June 26th if you listen to it the first day that it's out. Marks a year. It's sort of the Sleep Unplugged podcast birthday in our family. When we have a birthday, we have to wear this silly hat that I'm putting on if you're watching it on the YouTube, and you were supposed to wear it all day long. Even if you went out to a movie or a nice dinner, you had to wear this crazy hat. So happy birthday to the podcast. Really excited. We're hitting 1 year, and I thought it would be fun to create a gift for all the listeners. You know, what could I do for you as a gift for saying, hey, let's celebrate the birthday together because we're all in it together. And what I've done is if you're on Spotify, get on Spotify and search for the Sleep Unplugged Podcast Volume 1. So if you're a listener to the show, you know that we generally talk about or feature some song or an artist or something musical in every episode. So if you go on Spotify, search up the Sleep Unplugged Podcast Volume 1. All the songs that we referenced in the first year of the podcast have been neatly compiled into a playlist for you to listen to at your leisure. Now, if I forgot a song or overlooked a great version of one of the songs, let me know. I'll add it on there. Let me know what songs are your favorite. Are there any songs you had never heard before that the podcast sort of brought you to? We want this podcast to be informative, scientifically rigorous, but also a lot of fun. So I hope you enjoy that gift, including checking out the Breakfast Club's song that inspired our intro to the podcast. So in keeping with that tradition, we have the first song of the Sleep Unplugged Podcast Volume 2, which would be today's title, Lay Me Down in the Tall Grass, which if anybody out there is a Fleetwood Mac aficionado, you know, is a song, is a line from the song Secondhand News, which was the title, the opening track to their 1977 mega hit album, Rumors. A lot of people don't know that Rumors was actually their 11th album. So starting with Fleetwood Mac, which I've talked to people who thought that was their first album because it was self-titled, it was actually their first album with the lineup we think about with Fleetwood Mac. Lindsey Buckingham, Stevie Nicks had joined right before the Fleetwood Mac album. They joined Mick Fleetwood, Christy and John McVie, who had divorced in between Fleetwood Mac and Rumours. So they're on the outs and really at odds. And then Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham joined the band, and they have recently broken up. So when Rumours was recorded, it was a dysfunctional band nightmare that turned into musical solid gold. And secondhand news is really about breaking up with Stevie Nicks, about his subsequent relationships and how he really wasn't thinking about Stevie, but really couldn't live without her. It's a very complex song. And it was interesting when they were rehearsing the song and he was introducing the song to the band, he left all the lyrics out as they rehearsed it because he didn't want to upset Stevie Nicks and screw up the rehearsal because of what he was saying in the song. It's one of my favorite songs of the album. It was not released as a single. Of course, Rumours had Go Your Own Way, Dreams, Don't Stop, and one of my favorites from the late, great Christy McVie, You Make Loving Fun, who was the only real trained musician in the group, which is kind of an interesting little tidbit there. But anyway, one person described Secondhand News, as a critic described it, as the most euphoric ode to rebound chicks ever written. So love that song. So that will be the first song on the podcast playlist, volume two. So be on the lookout for that as well too. You can follow the show, Dr. Chris Winter Twitter, Dr. Chris Winter Instagram. And if you watch this on YouTube, you can find it at the Sleep Unplugged YouTube page. So let's get into this topic. It's a really good one, a really meaty and interesting one. I love sleeping outside. While we were in a room on the campus at the Aspen Ideas Conference, or the Aspen Meadows Conference Center, which was just like being immersed in a Zen garden. It was just such a beautiful space. I love sleeping outdoors. I love camping. I've got a screened-in porch with a fireplace, and I'll often just kind of go out there and build a fire and sit and read, or, you know, watch some television. Then I just will stay out there and sleep sometimes. I just love sleeping in the environment and really feel, in a completely non-scientific way, a real benefit when it comes to that. And so a lot of this research has been born out of, are we deriving any health-related benefit? And for the purposes of this podcast, we'll try to keep it to sleep-related benefit from sleeping outside. And there has been an explosion of these studies. You know, I talked about this in my first book, The Sleep Solution, Why Your Sleep's Broken and How to Fix It. And I remember looking it up and being sort of underwhelmed by the amount of research. You know, with this COVID, since 2020, there's been a tremendous interest in this in terms of, can we improve sleep outcomes, health outcomes, emotional anxiety outcomes through connection with green spaces. First study I came across, which was a really good one, it was a 2020 environmental research journal study called Green Space Exposure and Sleep, a Systematic Review. They looked at 13 peer-reviewed research studies and showed that in 11 of the 13 studies, they concluded that green space exposure was associated with improvements in both sleep quality and quantity. And the findings supported evidence of, quote, a positive association between green space exposures and sleep quality and quantity, also suggesting green exercise and therapeutic gardening as possible intervention methods to improve sleep outcomes. I think I just posted on my Instagram not too long ago, just a little quick video about being in green spaces. I have a massive herb and tomato garden that I actually utilize on my back porch. I'll post some more pictures of that. And just love being able to duck out there, water some plants, be around green, trim some sage, cut some basil for pesto or on the top of a pizza in between seeing patients. So I think that when we talk about exposure to green spaces, some of these research studies are just talking about having plants in your bedroom or something green close to where you're living that you're interacting with day to day. So when I look at this information, I think, why? What would the potential benefits to being connected to green spaces be, and how do they relate to sleep? And I think that the Markovich study, which was done in 2017, it was in the journal Environmental Research. It was a German research project. The name of this, the article was Exploring Pathways Linking Green Space to Health, Theoretical and methodological guidance. So basically, what this paper was saying is, we believe there's a link here in terms of being exposed to green spaces and better health. Let's break down what those pathways might look at. And the first one they called reducing harm, meaning that being connected to green could reduce your exposure to air pollution. And there was actually a 2022 study done in China looking at carbon dioxide. And for every unit of carbon dioxide that was reduced or you were exposed to, there was something like a 2% increase in your sleep quality. Now, I will also point out a lot of these studies are associations. So we have to be very careful. We've talked about this a lot on the show before, the relationship between something and association, the difference between that and it being causal. And there, for listeners of the show, you know, the example I always give is there is a relationship between having a lighter in your pocket and lung cancer. The lighter has nothing to do with the lung cancer, so we don't want to create a causal relationship, but the lighter is used to light the cigarette, which could lead to increased risk of lung cancer. So just keeping those in mind as we go through some of these studies. But they were looking at, you know, in terms of reducing harm, air pollution was one of them, noise and heat. So using green spaces as a buffering unit for noise. Now, we're not talking about nature noises, which has never really been shown to interrupt sleep in anything that I've seen. And then also buffering heat. And that's really interesting because there was actually a 2020 study. It was a Chinese study in the journal SSM Population Health called Does Sleep Grow on Trees? Which is my favorite title of any article we're going to talk about today. A longitudinal study to investigate potential prevention of insufficient sleep with different types of urban green spaces. So this study really sought to, number one, expand the population of people they were looking at. This study looked at 39,000 people in Sydney, Wollongong, and Newcastle. And beyond looking at a bigger population, they wanted to sort of separate out green spaces, a cornfield, maybe an untilled dirt expanse, green spaces with canopy, farmland, shrub, you know, vegetation of different sorts. And what they showed was there was a lower odds ratio for an individual getting insufficient sleep if the green space involved tree canopy. So they didn't see that relationship with spaces that were sort of open grass or open green fields, which I found really interesting that the canopy was really what was most important for it. There was another 2013 study in BMJ Open Journal, looked at something like 260,000 Australians and showed once again that being linked or being near, I think it was like a kilometer away or something like that. Don't quote me on that. I'm blanking on that one, but for what the parameter was, but being near to green spaces of all kinds lowered your risk for having insufficient sleep. And not too long ago, I think, through Sleep Score Max or through sleep, if you look up sleep.com, every year they do some sort of big national sleep survey. This year they were doing one on sleep and parenting. But a couple of years ago, they did something about what are the sleepiest cities, the cities that as a population are getting the fewest amount of hours or at risk for the most insufficient sleep. It would be really interesting to look back at that data and look to see if you could feel like, well, yeah, Arizona was up there. I'm making this up. I really don't remember who was at the top there. You know, are the cities that seem to be more desert-like, less likely for that neighborhood to be enveloped in sort of green canopy-laden space? Is that sort of, could you look at that and pinpoint that as a risk factor? So again, going back to this study, the 2017 Markovic study. So the first thing that they were looking at as a potential pathway of linkage was reducing harm, air pollution, noise, heat. The second was what they called restoring capacities, meaning that is relationship to that green space helping with your attention, restoring attention, or reducing psychological stress. And there's been a lot written about that as well, too. There was a 2014 paper by Hartig, Annual Review of Public Health, Nature's Impact on Health. And they were looking at that information and sort of saying the same thing, that one of the things that they saw most linked to nature and health was the reduction in psychological stress. 2019, in the journal Science Advances, and this is, again, a relatively recent study, there was a study looking titled Nature and Mental Health, an Ecosystem Service Perspective. And I'll just read a little quick clip from that, which was exposure to nature impacts, I'm sorry, the impacts of nature experience on cognitive functioning are highest in terms of emotional well-being and other dimensions of mental health. So looking at this idea of nature exposure, one of the terms I heard when I was out at Aspen was nature deficiency syndrome, or it was like, nature deficiency disorder. So like attention deficit, butchering. It was like attention deficit disorder. It was nature deficit disorder. And researchers from Google and Johns Hopkins, Ivy was the last name of the woman at Google. I'm blanking on the Hopkins, but they wrote a book called Your Brain on Art. Got to hear them speak. They were amazing individuals and so accomplished, and their book, Your Brain on Art, I can't wait to read. I've got an idea for a podcast about it. But, you know, they were saying that we have this sort of nature deficit syndrome. And this, there's a lot of research that would sort of back that up as well, too. So if we're looking to improve the emotional health of people, restore our emotional capacity, all of these things are going to be linked to better sleep outcomes if they're improving our emotional and anxiety health. The third thing that the Markovit paper talked about, so we've got reducing harm, restoring capacities. They talked about building capacities, encouraging physical activity, facilitating social cohesion, and all the interrelated parts that go with that. One of the speakers at Aspen Ideas was the Surgeon General, who is really pushing this idea of isolation being a huge public health problem. And this author is basically saying our connection to nature is not only going to facilitate exercise. Like, I like to, you know, go out and run on a trail or something like that. In fact, Donnie Strack, a medical guy with the Oklahoma City Thunder, told me many years ago, he said, "Chris, running's great, but if you can run on uneven terrain, like on a trail, it really takes that act of exercise and really elevates it." So outside of something like that, we're saying here that being out in a park, being out in nature, being around other people when you take that hike is restoring not only that connection to nature, but connections to other people that are going to facilitate better health and better sleep. So when we think about that in particular, exercise, building those capacities outdoors to facilitate better sleep, I think back to the Credlow study, which I've probably mentioned on this podcast before. It was a 2015 study entitled The Effects of Physical Activity on Sleep. Credlow, I believe, was out of Harvard, or I've got Boston in my head. I'm blanking on, I think that was a Harvard study, that basically said that acute exercise has a small but measurable benefit on total sleep time, how long it takes us to fall asleep, or our sleep onset latency, and the efficiency of our sleep. How much of the time we spend in bed are we actually sleeping? Stated another way, you're reducing WASO, which we've talked about, WASO, wakefulness after sleep onset. Stage one sleep and slow wave sleep are also moderately improved as well. When you look at individuals who are regularly exercising, it has small benefits on total sleep time, sleep efficiency, and a small to medium benefit on how fast we fall asleep and our sleep quality, which is generally related to something in terms of deep sleep. So the bottom line with the Credlow study is a little exercise or exercise every day is probably going to give you a measurable benefit in terms of your sleep. And so I've said on the podcast before, if you're trying to improve your sleep, taking it from point A to point B, exercise is probably the most studied way and most beneficial way you can accomplish that, I think. And, you know, a lot of these studies make very important points in terms of cultural differences, access, climate, geography. There's a lot of research that needs to be done with these types of things. But I think that as we look towards the intersection of environment and sleep, this is the space. And, you know, I think it's so interesting. I think about my own children. I've got one who's very interested in the environment up at the University of Vermont studying it. Another one that we're getting ready to move out. If you listened to last week's episode, we talked about shopping for her first bed. She's moving to New York. She'll be in Columbia as a research psychology doctoral student kind of thing. My wife's very interested in museum spaces and education and the changing role of the museum. And I'm the sleep doctor. And we're all sitting around the table when we can as a family. And I see all of our varied interests coming together right here. How do we use art? How do we use environment? How do we use the museum spaces and cultural diversity and artifacts and beautiful spaces and the land to bring about better health, better cohesiveness as a people, and frankly, better sleep? I think this is a huge, huge hot topic, and it's really kind of fun to be in the middle of that. Research on children is emerging. Like I said, over the last 2 years, it's been really, really hot. COVID really sort of has exploded this. And a couple studies I'll touch upon. One was a 2021 study. It was Italian, called The Association Between Indoor-Outdoor Green Features and Psychological Health During the COVID-19 Lockdown in Italy, a cross-sectional nationwide study. It was basically showing that kids who had access to green spaces showed lower anxiety, lowered anger, lowered fear. And when we think about quality sleep and what we need to support that, what the foundation of that is, it is sleep that does not involve anxiety. It is sleep that does not involve fear. We know very quickly that those two things specifically will reduce not only the quality of sleep, but often the perception of good sleep. So anything that can reduce those things is probably likely going to be linked to great sleep. There was a 2020 study in the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health. Another relatively recent study that was called The Impact of Residential Green Spaces on Sleep Quality and Sufficiency in Children and Adolescents Residing in Australia and Germany. This was a study of about 11,000 young people ages 10 to 15. And it was interesting that it really only showed traffic noise in older kids to be particularly linked to sleep. But again, the methods of using that, they were using a lot of satellite imagery to try to predict where the relationships would lie. And this one did not show as much of a robust correlation or relationship as some of the previous studies. So just wanted to throw that in. Just sort of as a counterpoint that we still have a lot to learn about this. We're still in the relationship process and relationship building, but relationships often form the best hypotheses for more prospective types of studies. And I'm sure we're going to be seeing those all over the place in the next decade. You know, when I spoke out at Aspen, somebody mentioned, Chris, you really started in all this in the 90s, which was the decade of the brain. And I remember that, the decade of the brain and so much interest in research and neurosciences and neurology and sleep and brain health and whatnot. You know, I think that we're really moving into what's going to be the decade of emotional support. And I think that there's a lot of seats at the table for that. You know, how can we tackle the massive amount of mental health that we see in loneliness and anxiety and depression? Because we just don't have the resources to deal with the tidal wave that's coming. So it was really interesting to be out there listening to people like, Calm, the Calm app, listening to government workers, listening to people in commercial spaces, insurance providers, et cetera. Everybody sees the problems coming and everybody wants to help. And focusing on sleep is always a tangible outcome. Not only is it a tangible outcome, but it's also a tangible way to start understanding when somebody's describing a sleep problem. It can be a little portal into perhaps somebody having mental health problems as well, too. And so access to green spaces, I think, is one simple way that we can sort of build into our lives. Hey, I could be inside reading this book. I'm going to go outside reading it. Hey, I could sit inside my cubicle and eat the sandwich. I'm going to walk outside to those picnic tables that are never used and expose myself. And you know, from this podcast, being outside, being involved in light, moving your body, all of these things really sum to support health. So maybe instead of running on your high school track, you get out on a trail, get into something really green and beautiful and dense. And let me know if you make some changes in terms of exposing yourself to greener spaces, getting outside more, what it does to your sleep personally. And as you're running along that trail, listening to the Sleep Unplugged podcast, volume one, love to know what your favorite song is. So that's it. That's really what I want to talk about. I'm really excited that we're entering in year number two of the podcast. Really happy that you're coming along on this journey with me. If you're a listener to the podcast, you know that generally we start the show with comments, corrections, criticisms. And I just wanted to feature one very quickly from Baca Rogers, who wrote me via the YouTube channel and said, really enjoying listening to your podcast. I'm reading your book, The Sleep Solution. I liked it so much. I bought your second book, The Rested Child. Even though I currently have no children, I've been told on multiple occasions that I display similar behavior to a child, though, so I can confirm it was not a complete waste of money. So, and you can read the rest of what Baca Rogers says on the YouTube page. It's very, very kind and very supportive. Check out The Sleep Vigilante on Twitter and check out his new book, Sleep to Heal. Get outside. Tell me how it affects your sleep. And until we talk next week on the Sleep Unplugged podcast, sleep well.